Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
It's a pleasure to welcome to WVTL-FM Charles Gehring of the New Netherlands Research Center in Albany. Good morning, Charlie. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. Just fine.
Talked with Charlie years ago. Had the occasion of hearing him speak not too long ago. The word scholar, and I think maybe that's the best word to apply to Charles Gehring, has a certain connotation of stuffiness, or my own particular failing of being pretentious, but that's not true with Charlie Gehring. He kind of tells it like it is and loves to tell stories about the old days, really, based on his special knowledge of the Dutch language, in particular Old Dutch. And I want to get to one particular area rather quickly, but just by way of background, Charles Gehring is widely known for translating the old Dutch records that were left in Albany and elsewhere from the 1600s, from almost 400 years ago. Not records of everything, but certain things. And there's one book that you and another gentleman translated called A Journey into Mohawk and Oneida Country that I'd like to focus on. This journey was taken in 1634 and 1635, probably the first journal by a European of where we live here in the or those of us who are up here in the Mohawk Valley.
Yes, exactly. His name was Harman Meindertse van den Boogaert, and he was a barber surgeon at Fort Orange in the colony of Rensselaerswijk. This was even before Beverwijk, the village, was formed. And he was asked to go out with two other guys in the dead of winter, the middle of December, knee-deep in snow and freezing cold, to find out why the fur trade had dropped off. There were rumors that the French were coming in from the west and offering more for the furs, and that the Iroquois had made some sort of an agreement with them. It was their job to go out to the Indian villages, Mohawk and Oneida villages mainly, and find out what was going on and try to convince them to trade with the Dutch. It's a journal that Bill Starna, who's from St. Johnsville, by the way, and I'm from Fort Plain, so it was a labor of love for two guys right from the heart of the Mohawk Valley. I did the translation, and Bill did the ethnohistorical annotations for the Indians involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and lest we think that was the end of it. I mean, there is your book. You can go to Amazon. You can find A Journey into Mohawk and Oneida Country. And I'll try the name now. Harman Meindertse van den Boogaert, the journal that he kept. You can find the book that Charlie and the other gentleman translated, William Starna. But then this other guy who writes graphic novels or creates them. I mean, it's like basically a comic book, right? He made a graphic novel out of this story.
That's right. A couple of years ago, our translation had been out for about 20 years, and a guy by the name of George O'Connor from Brooklyn, who does graphic novels, saw the manuscript or read our book, and was intrigued by it, and eventually got a contract to do a graphic novel. So you can either read about the journey or see it in pictures if you want. He follows the script exactly as van den Boogaert proceeds day by day. Does a very good job on the illustrations. He did a research on the Indian dress and what they would have looked like at that time. So it's quite accurate visually.
Hmm. Now, van den Boogaert, there are a couple of interesting factoids about him I want to work into the conversation. Let me just try one. You say, or I believe you told a New York Times interviewer some years back, that van den Boogaert could have been an ancestor of Humphrey Bogart.
That's right. Boogaert, or van den Boogaert, it simply means from the orchard. And it's very difficult to make that connection unless you get all kinds of confirmations, because it would have been, it's a fairly common name. It sounds exotic to us today, but someone from the orchard is very common. It's like Van Dyke, mm-hmm. In Dutch, which simply means you're from the dyke, from the dyke area.
Mm-hmm.
And there were dykes, all over the Netherlands at that time. And so you can't really say, but Humphrey Bogart was of Dutch ancestry, and I believe he was in the Holland Society of New York.
So this trip Van den Bogart takes is in 1634, 1635 in the winter. Where do we stand? How long had there been a Dutch settlement in Albany by then, and what was it? Were they settled in Schenectady yet?
No. No, there was no one in Schenectady at that time. The Dutch first moved into this area, in 1614. This is 6 years before the Pilgrims arrive in Massachusetts. They build a fort on Castle Island, which is the harbor of Albany right now, called Fort Nassau. They maintain a trading post there and then eventually build another fort called Fort Orange in 1624 and start bringing in permanent settlers to form agricultural communities to service the fur trading operation. So it's very early in this area.
Now, I thought you just said, I do believe, that Van den Bogart was sent out by the powers that be to find out why the fur trade was falling off. But I thought that had to do somewhat with the fact that some of the Iroquois had come to the Dutch and asked for the trip. Is that not so, or I got misconstrued something there?
Well, they alerted the Dutch that the French were getting involved in the fur trade. And this would have been far to the west of the Mohawks. The Indians who alerted the Dutch were the Mohawks. And they're the ones who were sort of middlemen bringing the furs down the valley after they had been accumulated during the winter. But the Mohawks, of course, were very interested in maintaining their contact with the Dutch, because they were getting trade goods directly from the Dutch, and they hadn't really gotten involved with the French trade yet. The Oneidas and Onondagas further to the west were more involved.
So, I mean, is it like the Mohawks saying, hey, look, you know, we like dealing with you guys, but, you know, the French are offering us something, and maybe you could up the ante or something?
Yeah, well, it was becoming a competitive thing. The Indians in general preferred the Dutch trade goods to the French. They considered them a better quality and also cheaper to buy, mm-hmm. or cheaper for trading purposes. And the Dutch were very much inclined to bring in goods to maintain the fur trade. Mm. It was a much more regular business with the Dutch.
Now, when Van den Bogart gets up here, and you know, with your knowledge of this area, because you grew up here, as you mentioned, a native of Fort Plain, you still have ties to Western Montgomery County. I mean, where did they visit here in what is now, let's say, Montgomery County?
Well, they strike out from the fort, taking the road directly. Well, it was the Indian path. It was called the Patanat Bos, the path into the woods or through the woods, directly from where Albany is today to Schenectady. There was no Schenectady there. They crossed the river at that point, probably over the islands, Crossbessa Island is one of them, Gooseberry Island, and proceed along the north shore until probably around Tribes Hill, just west of Amsterdam, and then cross over. They don't pass Schoharie Creek on the south side, so it's beyond the mouth of Schoharie Creek that they cross over. Mm-hmm. They manage to find a place on the river where the ice is firm enough that they can cross to the south side. And then they proceed up the south side until they probably go up Fall Hill, where Little Falls is, and then proceed directly, almost in a line, to Oneida Castle, which is south of the river.
Mm-hmm.
They go into several castles, and you can read about the location. There's still speculation on exactly where some of them were, but they are described in some detail by Van den Bogaert. He was very intrigued by the construction of the houses, what was in the houses, mm-hmm. and the size of the houses themselves.
Now, a castle was what the Mohawks, or also the Oneidas, or just the Mohawks, called their settlements, or their...
This is what the Dutch called them, kastelen castles, simply because they had stockades around them. They were enclosed as a castle would be.
So what was one like, I mean, according to Van den Bogaert, or what intrigued him, or what did he write about?
Well, once you got inside the main gate, there would have been a series of longhouses. Some of them were maybe 30, 40 feet long, and there were also some as long as 200 feet in length, about 20-some feet wide. They were made out of saplings that were bent over and tied at the top, and then covered with bark to secure them against the elements. On either side, there were benches upon which they slept, and in the center aisle, there would have been cooking fires. There would have been openings at the top where the smoke would be released. And this was one of the main problems at that time, was the constant exposure to smoke.
Huh.
A lot of eye problems, apparently, because of the smoke.
Yeah. Now, Van den Bogaert is welcomed here, he and his companions, right? Or, I mean, they weren't in any particular danger, or were they?
Right, because the Iroquois knew that they were here, because they had been coming down to the Hudson to trade and to visit with the Dutch. But this is one of the first visits by the Dutch to their villages, so they were so overjoyed to see them. In fact, they could hardly move; they were crowded in. To such an extent, and the Dutch say at one point that they could barely find space to relieve themselves when they had to, because they were constantly cheek to jowl with them. And whenever they left, they wanted the Dutch to fire their pistols.
Uh-huh.
As a form of salute. And they did it, I think, one time, but then they decided not to. I think because the Indians were watching them closely and they could see how long it took for them to reload. And the Dutch realized this as well, and that they would have been disarmed after the first salute. So they stopped doing that. But the Indians themselves, they have no firearms at this point.
Really?
This is the winter of 34-35. Now, just 6 years later, the Dutch go back up to negotiate with them again, and this time the Indians are firing muskets off in salute of the Dutch. So already they have become armed.
Ah.
Within 6 years, right.
We're talking with Charles Gehring of the New Netherlands Research Center, part of the State Library in Albany. He's known for translating early Dutch records of their colony, or colonies, or settlements, perhaps I should say, that are that were here in what we call New York State. If you have a question or comment for Charles Gehring, our number 684-0123. I'm Bob Cudmore. This is The Morning Show. Jason Aiello will have news at 9:30.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM, WVTL.
So we're talking about the journey into Mohawk and Oneida country, which is the title of the translation that Charlie Gehring did with the other gentleman, William Starna. So Van den Bogart goes out, completes the trip. I mean, is it good? I mean, they come back. And
about the journal, Bob, you said in the beginning that it was among the records here in Albany. Actually, the journal itself is in California. It's at the Huntington Library in California. It was collected by the railroad magnate Huntington, who loved manuscripts, and they unfortunately all end up in California if you want to see the original. But that's where I had to go to see it, and it was because of a certain passage in the Van den Bogart journal that William Fenton, who was the head of the anthropology department at the university in Albany, was concerned about, and he more or less asked me to go out and look at the manuscript and do a new translation, and it turns out to be the first reference to the Confederacy of the Iroquois. There had been a mistranscription of one of Van den Bogart's passages where he's quoting the Indians, and the Indians are saying Canosone, and he translates it as Franosone, and it becomes translated as the French, and Canosone is actually the name of the League of the Iroquois.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the earliest reference that we have, written reference to the League of the Iroquois.
Very interesting. Now, what I was asking was, when Van den Bogart finishes this, is it a good outcome? Do the Mohawks, the Oneidas, keep trading with the Dutch? You know, good outcome,
yes,
from the Dutch point of view, yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah. They convince the Indians that they will take this, they will take their message back to the Director General in New Amsterdam, and they will reestablish their trade network with them, which they do. Gifts are passed around, and Van den Bogart is given several beavers. It's funny because they're coming back with all kinds of goods that the Indians are giving them as gifts, and at one point, one of his compatriots, I think it's Willem Tomans, wants a bear that they have tied up, and he wanted to bring that back, but he sort of talked out of it.
Yeah, I think sounds like a good idea.
But you can imagine, these guys are very young. They're in their early 20s, and this is quite an adventure for them. They're seeing things that they had never dreamt they would ever see, and it must have been an incredible time for them, and again, just to stay alive, because a couple of times they're out in the staying in these little huts with no fire whatsoever, and it's a wonder that they didn't freeze to death, because they were going through water up to their knees at certain times. They were soaking wet. And then to be in freezing conditions, I don't know how they managed.
Huh. Now, when Van den Bogart came back, and I referenced this New York Times story, they have a following paragraph which makes this even more interesting to me. And you know how we people in the news business get things wrong sometimes, but here's what they wrote after their interview with you. They said, years later, Van den Bogart was made commander of Fort Orange, which is the predecessor of Albany, but fled back into Indian country after his fellow colonists discovered he was gay.
Well, the term gay, I don't know whether he was actually gay,
yeah.
But He did have a couple of slaves. One of them was Tobias, and apparently he had some sort of relationship with him. That's all we know. But he was accused of sodomy, and this was a capital offense among the Dutch. Sodomites would be sewn up in a bag and drowned, thrown in a river, and drowned was one of the punishments. And it's ironical that he fled to Indian country, up in the Mohawk Valley. Tobias is left behind about where Scotia is now, whether he got loose or whatever. But he's found there, and Van den Bogart ends up in an Indian warehouse up near Oneida. It's a place where they stored all of their winter supplies, all of their corn and so forth. And the Dutch send a hired gun out, Hans Vos, V-O-S, which means fox, to bring him back. And they have a shootout. And the warehouse catches on fire, or the longhouse, which was serving as a warehouse, catches on fire and burns to the ground. And Hans Voss brings Van den Bogart back alive, and he is in the fort waiting for Stuyvesant to come up. This is in the spring of 1648. And Stuyvesant is, Fort Orange was such an important factor in the fur trade, he's coming up to take the matter by hand himself. When the ice breaks in the river, it destroys the fort, and Van den Bogart escapes, gets out on the ice, breaks through, and drowns.
I tell you, you can't make this stuff up.
No. I mean, it's if you were to write this in a novel, nobody would, would seem too absurd. But this is exactly what happens.
Well, Charlie Gehring, I thank you for telling us this story. Of course, you have many more. Tell us about. We got to do a news break at 9:30, and then I think you probably got to go back to work there. But tell us about the New Netherlands Research Center. What is it, and what are you folks doing?
Well, we've been translating the Dutch records here for 36 years and making them available to the public, to researchers in translated form. Over the years, I've always wanted a center where all of the research resources would be gathered in one room, so that when people came, they would be able to find everything they needed to do research on the Dutch heritage in New York and what was New Netherlands at that time, from Connecticut to Delaware Bay. And this has finally happened on the 7th floor in the New York State Library. We have a New Netherlands Research Center. You can come. It's open 6 days a week from 9 to 5. And everything that we have accumulated over the years, all of the secondary and primary source materials are available in that room. It's we have Wi-Fi. You can bring your computer in and work, and it's quite a nice place.
Well, Charlie Gehring, it's always good to talk with you. Again, I'm glad. I want to thank the Schenectady County Historical Society for having an event so I could hear you again. And you certainly are very learned and have a lot of tales to tell about the old days here in what we call New York State. And what did they call it, the Dutch?
The Dutch called it New Nederland. New Netherlands. New Nederland was the country itself. New Amsterdam was the city that becomes New York, and Albany was called Beaverwijk.
Well, Charlie,
the district of the beavers.
Okay. I tell you, there's a million other questions I could ask, but again, you have to get back to work. Well, I have to have you on again, Charlie. Very good.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Call me anytime.
Take care.